Byrne, and welcome to Trust Yourself. I'm Eric Francis, your friendly neighborhood astrologer, here with a look at your chart from the standpoint of confidence, fidelity to yourself, the ability to trust yourself and the decisions that you make, and even the results of those decisions when they don't seem to be the right result, or maybe when you thought you made a bad decision. It's not always that much consolation to say that life is for learning, but it is. In addition to having a good time, I think there's two main possibilities, though there seems to be a lot of effort packed around them, and often not enough having a good time and too much effort, and the idea of learning or a development or growth process is often abandoned by people when they think that they're adults. But I think that we're constantly finding our purpose and in a continuous state of becoming. That is certainly true for you at this stage in your life. By stage, I'm really talking about by a fairly long measure. For example, you are at the end, or very close to the end, of a stage of your life that goes back to 2008, January 2008, when Pluto first entered your sign. It really feels like many worlds ago. I'm having a hard time getting some perspective on the distance in time. There just seems to be some distortion on the distance in time back to 2008. This may have something to do with the fact that we are living in the digital world where time is better measured in dog years than in years. Dog years would say we're living 5 to 7 years per year, or things are advancing 5 to 7 years per year. And it's difficult to keep up with that. It's difficult to maintain equilibrium in the face of so much change. And even before all this digititis set in, it was difficult to keep a handle and stay in balance with all this constant change, all of it driven by technology. The entire 20th century was propelled forward, and really the 19th century as well, as everything was automated, machines took over for handcrafts and for manufacturing. So Pluto has moved through your sign, and this is it is probably the most intense transit that you could ever go through. Though comparable transits are coming, they are not as long-lived, and you happen to be in the midst of something I want to get to soon after I discuss Pluto, which is about the way that your identity relates to the way that your family defined you when you were much younger, and it is not easy to move on from this. But in terms of Pluto, there is something of the unstoppable force in this in this energy. A little bit like Lord Shiva, it can go through any material. It's almost like a mini black hole. And the first house, which is Capricorn, which is the place where identifying you in the chart, and by extension Saturn, the ruler of Capricorn, is a delicately structured idea about the way that energy is organized. And you may think, well, the buildings in Washington, D.C., those are supposed to be about Capricorn. They're like massive giant columns, made of stone. But really, on the human level, Capricorn is more like a labyrinth. It's more like one of those jade things where there's one ball inside another ball inside another ball. You wonder how, in the name of God, they do this. Obviously, they can't start on the inside. They can't open up the ball. And what Pluto has done is redefine all of these pathways. In a sense, it has run roughshod over and through and into who and what you are, and has resulted in what I could only describe as a fundamental reconstruction of who you are. And there have been a lot of experiences that have come from this. And these experiences should help you build your confidence, your fidelity, your ability to trust yourself and your decisions. But the question is, have they? Has this really served to make you more trusting and confident of who you are and the choices you make and the things that you desire? Or do you really wish you could, turn back the process of your own experience? You can't, but you are still you, and you still have the ability to recover important parts of yourself. But I don't really think that that's the the name of the tune with the way things are now. But I would say, as a matter of reflection and recollection and putting yourself onto the map in terms of knowing where you are now, that to think about what you were doing and who you felt you were in 2007, 2008, 2009, in contrast to who you are today. And there's different ways to remember. You can just use your mind and go back in time. You may have notebooks, mementos. You may be able to read emails. If you have Gmail, one thing about it is it's kind of a time machine. It goes back a long time, and you may be very interested and intrigued by what you said, what you thought, who you were communicating with, how you felt about them, what will feel like a long time ago, a long, long stretch of time ago. 2008 to 2024 is 16 years. That is fully half of a Saturn cycle. And Saturn has been active also. It may well be that you have become 180 in a certain way. I'll probably say more about this later, but I want to mention, while we're talking about Pluto, that this planet, which is really six objects all orbiting a common point, is in the process of moving into your second house. That is the house associated with values and with priorities and with your management of your resources, what those resources are per se. And having Aquarius on the second gives a clue as to what is true on a deeper level of your psyche than you may be aware of. And here's why. The second house is what's yours. It's your stuff, your money, anything you have that you can move around, anything you can pack into your car. It's not about real estate, but, it might include your piano, the tools of your trade, your vehicle. And it's also about your personal resources, be they skills, talents, abilities, psychological resources. And it's also about how you feel about yourself. And you have a rather collective sign covering the second place, which is Aquarius. This counts for Aquarius Sun, second solar house, and Capricorn Sun, second solar house being Aquarius, and Capricorn Rising, second house by whole sign houses, which we're using in all cases during this reading, is covered by the sign Aquarius. And Aquarius is not really about you. It's not. It's about some form of a collective concept of what we are together. It's about shared ideas, shared plans, peer pressure, groups, mostly small groups, groups where you might know most of the people, or groups with friends and friends of friends. Doesn't go much out further than that. And to have this covering your second place means that you may feel that some kind of an editorial board decision is required for you to have a preference or a priority or a value. And this may be a significant source of loss of contact with your ability to trust yourself. That idea that you may need to persuade someone before you make a choice that largely only affects you, or may peripherally affect someone else before you make a decision. And what you decide is important to you, which has nothing to do with what anyone thinks. Perhaps a decision might have something to do with what someone else thinks. But what's important to you? However, you may feel, you may believe, it may even be true that others have considerable influence over what you think is important and how you feel about yourself. And now, Pluto is about to arrive for good to stay in November in Aquarius. Now, there's one brief visit back between September 1st and around November 17th when Pluto goes back into Capricorn, and it grazes the very last degree. And what's interesting about that last degree of Capricorn is that it has a picture, an image, a symbol, in what's called the Sabian symbol book. And that last degree is kind of conspiratorial. The degree is described by the image of a group of powerful men who run the world behind the scenes. And so again, there's this notion that there must be a group involved before you make a choice, and that every choice you make is independent of that is somehow an act of rebellion, that it is somehow an act of defiance, that it is a revolt against what others think that you should do, or who they think that you should be. And personally, I don't think that it's helpful to view your mere ability to make life choices as being any form of defiance. Rather, what you value is an affirmative condition. It's about saying yes to what you want, to who you are, and the way that you know things. It's about saying yes to your abilities. And what Pluto's going to do is, well, I think it's going to bring three different forces into prominence. And you get to decide which you want. The normal way that Aquarius works is that it tends to put people under a lot of pressure to conform. It is rather lockstep. I know Aquarius is seen as groovy in the age of Aquarius, not awesome baseline. But that's not really what Aquarius is about. That's a propaganda campaign that came from a Broadway show that has nothing to do with reality. Aquarius is ruled by Saturn. It is the sign of patterns. It is the sign of the patterns that groups form, and in particular, the way that groups put pressure on people to conform. And if it's true that Aquarius is about individuals and rebellious people, that would be about those who choose to respond, to not buckle to the pressure to be someone that you don't want to be, to in any way alter the status of your decisions or your priorities because others have said so. But humans are very much like that, that they will tend to buckle under. Among the many interesting science experiments, or psychology, sort of science experiments, psychology experiments of the 20th century was one where there was a group of people, and one experimental subject among the group, but the experimental subject thought that the entire group was part of the experiment. And they were testing to see whether the group could pressure the individual to agree to something that was blatantly false. Like, for example, how many dots are on the page? And if anyone has access to the study or knows the name of the authors, I'd really like to give it a close read. I've only read about it and heard about it either in documentaries or in therapy training. And the outcome was that, imagine a group of five people and then one experimental subject, thinking that everyone's an experimental subject, and they pick up a card, and the card has four dots on it. And they show it to the group, and they say, how many dots are on this card? And everyone says there are three dots on the card. And you're looking at the thing, and there's four dots. How much pressure could be put on the test subject to agree that it was actually, I forget which I said it was, the wrong one? Imagine there's three dots on the page and the group says it's four. How much pressure could someone stand to be convinced that it was different than they were actually seeing with their eyes? And my understanding is what they found, it was actually fairly easy to persuade someone just to go along, just to get along, just to not, quote-unquote, mess up the experiment. And this is a thing that may be inherent in your nature in things less obvious than how many dots are on the page. That you may think that you are subject to the views of what others think is true merely because they think that they're true, and that you don't want to go against that. So the first kind of posture of Pluto and Aquarius is the pressure the groups put on the individual to agree that it's not that same number of dots. And if they could get them to agree to that, imagine how you could get people to agree to things like masking and social distancing and to take injections and all that. Most people are not that strong. But you need to be strong. The second condition of Pluto in Aquarius is the individual stands up from the group to the group. It distinguishes itself. It, in this case, it would be you. Go with your actual understanding, and you're not interested in being pressured or succumbing to pressure. And so the individual standing up to the group is a crucial element of Pluto in Aquarius. And this is where you're most likely to find yourself. Unless you feel like being pushed around by people who are convincing you that there's so many dots on the page when there's not, but everyone says that there is, and they're just head-fucking you, and you go along with it, well, do you? Do you? These pressures are all over us all the time. Whether it's the pressure to smoke when you know it's not good, this maybe goes back a while, the pressure to take some drugs, the pressure to get a boob job, the pressure to get a vaccine, quote-unquote vaccine, the pressure to believe anything that is not true. There are always people who are readily willing to believe what's not true because it's expedient, and they may gang up, and when you start putting four or five of them together, they have a lot of power, and the question is, what do you do with this? How do you respond to this? And Pluto in Aquarius is saying that if you don't devise a way to stand up to this kind of pressure and this kind of treatment, then you're just going to get squashed, and then you're kind of unliving your life. It's not really your life. Has got nothing to do with you. It's always about what other people think. And this is a very common condition in families and in society generally. The third one, the one that we wish could be true, the one that many kids try to get their family to do, and I still don't have a good example of this. I only have transient, temporary examples. Is that the group evolves together. The group evolves together. And that is a long shot. You know, kids who wish their family would just wake up, people who are working for change in society who wish society would just wake up. I think that the wish of group evolution is more of a thing than group evolution itself, especially when there's any desire to have a collective change. It is very unlikely to do so. Collectives in the Aquarius style tend to be in lockstep. But there are times when groups evolve. There are times when there is some form of collective growth. And those three options are basically what you get to pick and choose from under the influence of Pluto and Aquarius. And my supposition is that you will be happier and more confident as you learn to understand what your priorities and your values are, first of all, without anyone dictating to you what they are supposed to be, and two, that you learn to be those things without needing permission, and when you are put under pressure, that you either stand up to the group's pressure, or you tell people you're taking a hike. There was a scene from the life, late in the life of Jerry Garcia, where the Grateful Dead family, the crew, the band, the girlfriends, the road crew, and all this became very concerned about his drug use, and they all showed up at his house to have a kind of an intervention, to pressure him in some way. And he responded by getting in his car and driving away. Now, Jerry didn't die of an overdose. He died of cardiac failure. And drug abuse is not necessarily a good example, but I think that I personally admire Garcia for what he did, which is he did not want to succumb to what a group thought he should do. And it's not really ever this obvious. There's rarely interventions where, you know, people gather in a room and say, now you're going to be Democrat. We're so sick of you having these conservative values and your John McCain picture on the mantelpiece. Here's a voter registration form. Now sign on the dotted line. No, that's not how it works. It's subtle, it's manipulative. But when you stand up to this, that can feel like it's dangerous. And we're in dangerous times, and from the looks of your chart, you're going to need and thrive upon courage. All right, let's take a minute and listen to the traffic trance at exit 20 on I-87, north and south, Socrates exit. the theme of consensus reality appears in your chart a number of different ways. And one of them pertains to who you think you are. This is much more personal than your values, your decisions, the this imaginary, remember, at this point it is, committee that's supposed to approve of everything that you think is a good thing, or maybe they don't really approve of it. And this is not necessarily about you, but it's something in the inherent structure of Capricorn. And I think the inherent structure, the mental structure of a sign is, you know, mental meaning the whole mind map and reality map, is contained in the solar chart. Meaning you could take the chart that you're looking at on this page and take all the planets out of it and just say, have a chart with Capricorn first house, Aquarius second house, Pisces third house, Aries fourth house, Taurus fifth house, etc. No planets, just your personal blank chessboard. The fourth house in astrology is about security, and it's also got a lot to do with family, and it's also got a lot to do with the childhood home, the estate, the four walls, and the garden walls. Essentially, the fourth house goes out to the edge of the garden walls, in my view. And you have Aries there. And this is another image of something very similar to having Aquarius on the second, where you expect there to be a committee approving everything that you think or want or value. Having Aries in the fourth is about you seeking the grounding of your reality, of who you are, in the family construct. Now, to some extent, everyone does this, but it is primary in the charts of Capricorn. Aries could be anywhere. If you're Sag rising, you're more likely to find that sense of identity represented by Aries in some form of experimentation or gaming, risky behavior, sports, art, sexual exploration. But with Aries on the fourth, it's about family and feeling like you're not safe unless your family approves of who you are. And again, almost everyone fits some form of this description, but it's a little extra for Capricorn. And the reason this is so important now is because, first of all, Pluto in Cap has done this kind of demolition job on you 1.0, or maybe a couple of editions further, but really, and it's as if the next release of you has not come out. Sorry to use a computer metaphor, but it's not necessary, because you can find the locus of your identity in grounding in whatever this Aries thing is about. And there are a diversity of significators saying that, first of all, your family's had too much influence. You introjected it. You took it on. You took it with you. And now you are able, there's a revolution coming, if you want. Now, before I go there, the reason for the revolution is because a group of planets has taken up residency in early Capricorn. And I've been writing about this, and it is included in an article called The Family Hunger Game of Family. I'm not sure the exact title. I just made a mistake. I'm trying to draw a series into this chart, so let me slow down and do that. I'm going to draw it in red. Not very well drawn, but it's right there in this group. The group of planets takes a cluster of different energies, all associated with ancestry and family, and has them kind of burning through who you are, and right in early Capricorn. And one of the ways to consider this is that there are a diversity of personalities that you have created as adaptations. There's different versions of you, essentially. Now, this is a documented phenomenon. Internal family systems is a brilliant therapy approach that deals exactly with this thing. It deals with parts. And the parts are, of course, imaginary, but they're characters that kind of come to life as adaptations in our minds. And there's different ones and different people and different emphasis. And what I'm suggesting is that you get to know these different aspects of who you are. Maybe one is the person that you were when you were with your mother. Maybe another one is the person you were with when you were with your grandparents or great-grandparents. Another is the version of who you were when you were involved in a large tribal group of your family, or a small group of your family. It's going to be worth mapping this out, like expanding this mind map and finding out who these different entities are. And one of them was some form of a response to a person who is not especially nice. There's a line of cruelty coming through your family line that is likely to be restricted to one person, but it had a way of spreading out. Who is this person? Also, accounting for the influence of alcohol in your family and how that affected you. So, for example, if you had a parent or grandparent, and the point of saying the grandparent would be that they affected your mother or father, and then those people affected you. Who was an alcoholic? The result is to create kind of a rubber ball of emotional isolation. And the idea that people are not really emotionally accessible, this is the net effect of alcohol, is to create a dangerous unavailability. And other drugs could have been involved. Sometimes there's a mixed use of drugs, mixed abuse of drugs, substances. But on the surface, the way to kind of sniff it out is to follow the scent of whatever it is, beer or wine or whatever. And you have to account for this. You have to account for what this did to you, what expectations it gave you, because those expectations shape you and the way that the world responds to you. If I haven't recommended it any time lately, there's a book that I was assigned to read in Hakomi therapy training with Ron Kurtz, and the book is called A General Theory of Love. And this is a really brilliant analysis of the way that the emotional tone of the family environment shapes and restricts the available emotional tones to the child. And once those things called limbic pathways are established, they're very difficult to escape from. And they're so seemingly indelible that we may get the idea of karma. Oh, this person in my life is some kind of a karmic lesson. So I'm not saying that there's not people who are in our lives by karmic lessons. I'm not saying that there's not karma. I don't have proof of this. And certainly a lot of people who do a lot of bad things don't really seem to have bad things come back and happen to them. And when you read accounts of what's going on in past lives, like in Journey of Souls, for example, it's like, oh, isn't it too bad? You know, you shot your wife. Now, aren't you going to learn a little bit better next time? I don't really find that credible. But maybe that's how it is. But what I'm suggesting is that in day-to-day reality, it is very probable, in my opinion, just from reading and observing then for the subsequent 25 years, that a lot of this has to do with the expectations set up by early childhood environments that then shape developing consciousness in what's called the limbic system of the brain, that keep repeating the patterns. Is it my karma to have an alcoholic boyfriend? Why, even the boyfriend I didn't, who wasn't drinking when I met him, suddenly becomes an alcoholic. What's going on with that? This book explains how that can work without karma. And I think that you may find it beneficial to learn this material. Meanwhile, Aries is under some extraordinary transits. Aries being the scene of where you seek safety in some form of conforming your personality to what others are going to approve of, such that they let you stay in the tribe. And what's about to happen is that this portion of your chart, Aries, is about to fill up with so many planets. This is going to take place over approximately 2 years in 2025 and 2026, that you're just going to have no choice but to basically get on the horse of who you are and ride this thing, wild though it may be, and plunge into the experience of being and actualize yourself in a way that does not necessarily feel like sitting on top of a cliff at Esalen Institute doing transcendental meditation with your fingers in that little thing or your middle fingers touching your thumb and then suddenly you self-realize. No. Actual self-realization is a journey and it can be a bit of a rough road at times because you have to keep making mistakes and you've been around on the planet a while. You've done plenty of this and Chiron has been in Aries, which is kind of your second sign, for a long time, since 2018, 2019. But now, your ruling planet, Saturn, is coming in. Neptune is coming in. They're going to form a conjunction. This is getting hot in the spring of 2025. And it's happening now. It is real as it gets now. Because it is, we know about it, it is in the Ritta, it is emerging and you're hearing this information. And then Chiron and Eris are going to form a series of conjunctions in your fourth house. This is essentially the opposite of the Pluto transit, of this dismantling of who you are. And that dismantling is very important. You don't really change without taking apart your previous personality. And the opposite of that is this rebuilding of a new sense of who you are. And there's real synthesis involved when Neptune gets together with Saturn. The formation of a whole new substance, a whole new compound is happening. And I think this is all very good news. And the thing is that you're going to have to trust more than yourself for this. You're going to need to make an investment of trust in the process of becoming someone new. My old friend Rick Levine once used the metaphor of the caterpillar weaving the cocoon around it. It weaves this little watertight cocoon, and then God knows what happens in there. I don't know if anyone's ever actually documented this or if they were to take pictures with x-rays, if it would ruin the whole thing or what. It kind of melts and becomes a whole new being, and this is called metamorphosis. There's different theories about why this is. The best one I have ever heard was that it was an evolutionary adaptation of two completely different creatures, the worm and the caterpillar and the butterfly, which kind of joined together in one journey and one becomes the other. But this process is going on for you right now. It's almost as if you're in the cocoon right now. And it must be frightening to realize that everything you thought you knew about yourself is going to melt and then become something else. But is what you thought you knew about yourself that helpful? And the things that are genuinely your soul are only going to be enhanced, only going to be made stronger by this. I think that you will, as A Course in Miracles says, you will at last emerge as yourself. Let's check out a couple of other concepts here. And I'm largely sticking to the cardinal cross right now and reading the in the cardinal signs, though we have dipped into Aquarius. But there's something important going on in the cardinal signs, and that is that the lunar nodes are there. And they're only there through part of the rest of this year. They're going to move into Virgo and Pisces soon. And they are sweeping through Libra and Aries. And there's more good news here in the sense that clearing the tendencies of authority over you, and authority generally is very much in line with South Node going through the 10th, and this tropism toward self-becoming, this profound tropism toward self-becoming is indicated by the North Node in Aries. So what I'm suggesting here is that there is something happening that you don't need to worry about. You don't need to control this. It will happen. And how you get to that point of trusting, I'm not sure. Maybe it's worked at times in the past. Maybe you feel you have no choice. Maybe you know instinctively that something is happening that's going to help you emerge from one state into another state. And meanwhile, you have plenty. It's not like you have to, get in your sleeping bag and dip it in plaster of Paris and then see where you wake up in 5 or 6 or 10 months. There's plenty that you can do. And in that time, that is self-creative. And one of the messages that your life, your experience of living has been encouraging of is a level of creative exploration, it's going on in two ways. One way is revolutionary and disruptive. That's Uranus in fifth house in Taurus. And you may have had a diversity of experience where you, for example, try out various forms of sexual experimentation that you've wanted to try, where you feel like you're on a real adventure and you're wondering if this is okay, and it really feels like overthrowing some tradition or expectations or values. And anyone who experiments in a deep way with art and or sex, and usually they're closely related, there's a lot of sex in art and a lot of art in sex, at some point has to be in any peace with yourself, has to arrive at the place where you say, this is my life, this is my thing, I do my thing, and I'm allowed to smoke cigarettes, I'm allowed to kill myself, I'm allowed to drink myself to death, I'm allowed to base jump, I can do this because I say that I can do it. Damn it, it's my life. And there's some of that here, only it's not necessarily destructive in any way. It's not even necessarily that dangerous. But what it is liberating. And humans often respond with guilt when they do anything liberating. And by the way, this Pholus Quaoar Ixion Cupido series thing is cautioning you that when you do something and you experience guilt, the first instinct is, oh my God, I've done something wrong. But what I would propose to you is that you can trust that when you experience guilt, you're experiencing that guilt because you're doing the right thing for yourself, not the wrong thing for yourself. You're doing something liberating for yourself, and all you're experiencing is an eruption, an inflammation of the resentment that people may that you may have felt in response to those who try to judge you and hold you down. And often this has to do with sexuality. I want to read a quote. And I know that the discussion of sexuality is just like not a thing these days. And, I know there are some people who appreciate my ability to focus this topic in a humane way that honors everyone. And some want to throw rotten tomatoes. So if you need to throw a rotten tomato, I'll give you my address and you can stand outside my door and do that. The author is Wilhelm Reich. Suppression of the natural sexuality in the child. He's a psychiatrist member. Suppression of the natural sexuality in the child makes the child apprehensive, shy, obedient, afraid of authority, good, and adjusted in the authoritarian sense. It paralyzes the rebellious forces because any rebellion is laden with anxiety. It produces by inhibiting sexual curiosity and sexual thinking in the child, a general inhibition of thinking and the critical faculties. In brief, the goal of sexual suppression is that of producing an individual who is adjusted to the authoritarian order and who will submit to it in spite of all misery and degradation. I will add this quote to your page. This is a kind of printed and hang it on the mirror quote. Put it on your phone's home screen. Make a poster out of it. Because it explains so much of what we experience, and it explains a lot about guilt. And what is interesting here is and I often meditate on this, and it informs my understanding of sexuality, is that the goal of suppressing sexuality in children is not a moral goal. It is not actually about right and wrong. That is the costume that it's wearing. That is the priest saying it's a sin, go to Sunday school, don't wear your skirt so short, whatever they do to people now. And it seems like in many ways society is in complete revolt against this, but not really so much. There's still a lot of people who are basically laden with anxiety because they were compelled to be shy, obedient, and afraid of authority. But it's not about morals. It's not about right and wrong. That's a game. And so that you may feel guilt when you want to explore, feel something, try whatever it is you want. As long as everybody's over the age of 18 and there's no real fiduciary authority, they're not like your student or something like this, and everyone's free to say yes, you can do whatever you want. Do whatever people are willing to do with you. With the caveat of the price, the toll is honesty. And that's it. You're free to be who you are and do what you want. And I promise you that based on a wide diversity of factors, Pluto in the second, okay, Mars retrograde in the eighth, Uranus and QB1 in the fifth, all of these houses are deeply invested in sexual reality. That this is a valid path to getting to know yourself. And remember that the guilt is just suppressed resentment for having been held down from doing so. And the most important thing, and Reich gets to this, the most important thing that is held down is curiosity and thinking. Inhibiting sexual curiosity and sexual thinking in the child creates a general inhibition of thinking and the critical faculties. You don't think of it this way. You don't think, wow, why is everyone so conformist? Well, maybe they were flogged into giving up their sexual curiosity. This is what he's saying. And this is this is almost always very powerful medicine. And like riding a bicycle, you just have to trust your ability to do it, and you have to fall down a couple of times. And you fall down a couple of times, and you get up. And by the way, since we're ending on a theme of sexuality and eroticism, in my many explorations of these facets of life, I have learned that if I try something once and I don't necessarily like it, that doesn't mean I don't necessarily like it. It means that I might have to adjust a little bit, learn how to do this, learn how to be okay with this experience. So if there's something you want, you thought about it for like 10 or 20 years, and you try it once and you don't like it, don't be afraid of that. And that counts for a lot of things. It counts for all things, all experiences, all places where you will express yourself in new ways and feel your own reality. On that note, I leave you. Maybe I'll see you over at another sign. Thanks for your trust, and bye for now.